Well, as what was so famously said some years ago, our long national nightmare is almost over. I have been having a wonderful time. Yeah, I said almost. I've been having a wonderful time covering the election for both the Fullerton Observer and the Los Angeles Daily News, and blogging about it. But after a while, as the experiments of Olds and Milner and brain science back in the 50s indicated, pleasure at some point turns to pain. And I am so ready for this to be over, because it's gotten dirtier and dirtier, and I'm starting to get obsessive compulsive washing sorts of things going on because of what people are saying and the words that they're using and the images that I think are toxic to the body politic. And the body politic is us, and it's an important issue. This is not a political sermon, and I will say political things that will annoy some people because they won't be harsh enough on one side or another. But I really believe that we are one country, at least aspirationally. Not in fact. Not from the moment of our foundings were all men or all men and women created equal, and nor was that recognized in law, but aspirationally, that has been the direction that we have wanted to move, and we have moved in fits and starts sometimes, with reverses sometimes, but we want to somehow, acknowledging our differences, respecting our differences, celebrating our differences, feeling enriched by our differences, still have a sense of the possibility of e pluribus unum, out of many, one. Not one that is all the same, but one polity made up of different people who have some regard and respect for each other, and the emotional environment, as well as the air and the water, the air that we breathe socially. How do we talk to each other? How do we talk to people who are different from ourselves? Is one hatred, one putting down, one arrogant condescension from one side exactly the same as another? Or can we be held to a standard where, in fact, we treat people not the way we think they should be treated, but the way that we wish, even if they don't, they would treat us? That, again, for me, is aspirational, because I don't succeed at it all the time. I want to be tolerant of difference. I want to see what nourishes people who think differently from me, and to see what's behind it and understand it and feel it with compassion and acceptance, but it is sometimes difficult. It is an act of will to calm the epinephrine rush, the adrenaline rush of anger and rage as the political season heats up. It's an act of will to step back from the anger of rhetoric that is misleading and wrong. I was at, and I've told some people the story, a couple of weeks ago, at a think tank, a conservative think tank out on the desert. And it was filled with retired generals and admirals, a couple of well-connected people from various secret intelligence services, both here and abroad. And one of the people there said, to great agreement amongst the crowd, that Ehud Olmert, the lame duck prime minister of Israel, is a traitor. And I was a guest, and the guest liberal, I guess, and I raised my hand. I said, that's just the wrong word. And it's indicative of how we have debased the currency of political communication. It is one thing to disagree with a policy. It is one thing to say, I think these policies are terrible, that they will lead to pollution, that they'll lead to war, that they'll lead to poverty, to hate the policy. It is another thing to use loosely a word like traitor. Traitor is a matter of intent, not simply of outcome. a good person, well motivated, might do something that leads to the downfall of an empire. But it's not treason without the intent to undermine whatever your homeland or organization is. It's the wrong word for Olmert. I happen to have had dinner with him once, and I wasn't hugely impressed, but he's not a traitor. In our own political rhetoric, we have gotten into this level of name-calling, and it has some ramifications. Now, politics has always been rough and tumble. Mr. Dooley said, it's not beanbag, it's full contact. There were races in the 19th century that got very heated with lots of accusations and lots of yelling and screaming and name-calling. But you know, it's like terrorism. An individual maniac in the 19th century could cause only so much damage. Our technology is such that we can cause far more damage today with our words, with communications, with lies, and with smears. And sometimes we may feel justified, but most of the time it isn't really very helpful, and it really isn't very accurate. As this political season has gone on, we have all been treated to Barack Obama, the famous United Methodist Muslim communist Marxist socialist terrorist. Anybody bothered that those things don't fit together in a constellation? It's not only not true, it doesn't even make internal sense within the smearing. One of my comrades, one of the people that works on the other side of the aisle from me at Daily News on Friendly Fire, Gail Sepura Saunders, was screaming about Obama being a Marxist and that if she wanted to move to Cuba or the old Soviet Union, she would, by God, move to Cuba and not vote for Obama. And I responded to that, which is, this is silly stuff. Words mean something, like the word traitor means something. The word Marxist, and what gets thrown by the other side, the word fascist, these labels mean something, and when we just use them loosely, they're not even labels, they're libels. On the ground, I can't tell the difference between Marxism and fascism. They're both statist forms of government, and the people live often pretty miserably under either conditions, none of which has to do with European socialism and medical care. To use these words, it's just inaccurate. Don't vote for him, or don't vote for McCain, or don't vote for whoever you don't want to vote for, but don't vote based on something other than somebody's labels and smears. And it goes for the other side. Here's where I'm going to get into trouble. The words that get yelled at McCain are Alzheimer's, demented, erratic, warmonger. Now, I don't believe, given his experience, that he loves war. He's experienced too much of it to love it. Could he lead in places that I don't want to go? Of course. Could Obama? Of course. But when we are making aspersions about the character of the individuals, and it's fair to judge character in as it's demonstrated during a campaign, and I know you will, but that's different from really going into what I consider to be smears. And the reason why it's so important, and the reason why I'm dedicating a sermon to this, is that there is another part of this process, which is a road that America has gone on to delegitimize the results of our elections. We are a nation of laws. We are a democracy. As a democracy, we have all the flaws of the collected wisdom or ignorance of the people, as Mencken pointed out. But that's our form of government. As Churchill said, the worst form except for all of the others that have been tried. But we depend on a contract. And that contract is, there's an election, sometimes more fair than others. We know that our elections are imperfect. But we kind of stipulate as part of the social contract that we will abide by the election. And in return for us saying, okay, I didn't like the result, I didn't like some of the techniques, but in return for that, we get back the reasonable expectation that the losers will not be slaughtered, which is often the case throughout the rest of the world. We live to campaign another day when we lose. We live to still have our newspapers, our radio stations, our cable stations. We don't expect to be arrested. We don't expect to be fined. We don't expect to be persecuted. We expect to campaign again another day. But that's a contract where both sides offer something. The legitimacy of an imperfect election's results and our own safety and ability to go on and campaign and bring the issue up another day. We have gotten pretty nasty recently. We've gotten pretty nasty in the names that we call. We've gotten pretty nasty in people stealing political signs and yard signs and defacing property. And even if I agree with the message on the defaced property, it's just wrong. It's one thing to have hanging chads in Florida. It's another thing to have hanging Sarah Palin and hanging Obama by nooses in people's yards. It might be legal, it might be freedom of speech, but it has a toxic effect on all of us. I think we started really delegitimizing the presidency with LBJ, and I am perfectly willing to tell you that I helped all I could. Having voted for LBJ and gotten Goldwater's policies, I was somewhat upset and joined some of the chanting. And that's okay. It's okay to call names. It's okay to question the marital status of the candidate's parents at the time of the candidate's birth. I don't have a problem with that, but I do have a problem with McBird when the allegation was that LBJ had been complicit in the assassination of JFK. That was an undermining of the legitimacy of a regime. People didn't like Carter, and that was okay, but they didn't like his policies. Almost everybody understood he was president. People might have liked Reagan and disagreed with his policies, but they agreed that the election was more fair than not. With Clinton, things started to change. And for some reason, some people on the right, not all people, thought his presidency was illegitimate based on their perception of the content of his character. And he was impeached, and he never really regained the legitimacy of the whole nation. It doesn't mean agreement. It doesn't mean love the president. It means accept the legitimacy of the results of the election. We have, obviously, the delegitimizing of Bush after the Florida debacle and recount, and a second election, and by the left, Bush has never been seen as the legitimate president. Believe that or reject that, it's not my point. My point is that it is costly to our system when we get into this tradition, which has not really been a part of our tradition. But I see it happening, and it makes me worry about my country and our aspiration for unity. Already we see in this election, and already, as you indicated, we may be seeing on Tuesday night or Wednesday, and I hope whoever wins it isn't close, because I don't want this litigated. But already we see the attempts to delegitimize the results. Not just to say, I don't like McCain or I don't like Obama, but to delegitimize the results. Democrats are saying, look, The Republicans are engaging in voter suppression. They're taking people off of the rolls. They're moving polling places. Debo, that owns too many of the voting machines, is flipping votes, so you better confirm your vote if you can. And I am sure that there is voter suppression, and I'm sure that there will be fraud, and I'm sure that there will be suppression. We have reached that point in the election where both sides are terrified that the other side is going to steal it. The cartoon in the Daily News today above my op-ed piece is a donkey and an elephant and Uncle Sam, and they're at the starting line of a race, and it says, "Ready, set, steal." Democrats are absolutely convinced that the Republicans will steal the election. Republicans are absolutely convinced that the Democrats will steal the election with phony voters being enrolled and registered, with illegal aliens who are voting, with all kinds of voter fraud, not to mention the cemeteries. The Republicans believe, and I think there's some substance to this, that cemeteries vote overwhelmingly Democratic. And to me, this is kind of an acknowledgement of the passion that's on the Democratic side this year, but, you know, other people feel differently. It's important that we do understand ourselves as not simply red and not simply blue, not simply Democrats or Republicans, that we understand ourselves as Americans, whether we were born here and we have gotten citizenship or we have just taken it for granted. This franchise, the vote, is very precious. And I know that's a cliche to say people have died for it, but it's precious and it's real. And there is fraud, but you want to know something? There is far more innocent error than there is fraud. Fraud is not going to determine this election. Innocent error is a much greater factor. Anytime you count over 60 million, and I know you do it all the time, anytime you count over 60 million, there are going to be counting errors, and they are going to be significant. We sometimes have people counting attendance here. And we can have three good, intelligent Unitarians coming up with three really different numbers. Now try to make 60, 70, 80 million ballots, whether they're Chads or electronic. And the terrible truth is it wasn't so much hanging Chad or even the Supreme Court. They never would have been involved in what was going on 8 years ago if all of my relatives in Miami hadn't voted for Buchanan. And they didn't vote for Buchanan out of a sudden love amongst ancient Jews to vote for Pat Buchanan. They voted for Buchanan because of the crazy butterfly ballot that had been designed by a Democrat. Error is far more a factor in our lives than conspiracies. It is not to say don't look, don't be careful, don't make sure, but error is a bigger factor than fraud. How many of you have voted already? How many of you voted more than once already? Just checking. Well, I'm about to offend you. Our election, for me, is our national communion. It's a secular communion. And yes, it's okay. You can take your communion separately through the mails or early voting, which is relatively convenient in Orange County and relatively impossible in Los Angeles. But there is something exciting about standing in the lines and being part of America, seeing the process before us and being a part of it. This particular communion, I think, is a pretty important one. And I think our votes are important. And I am relatively content that I will stipulate that whoever comes out of the election will be my president, whether I love it or hate it. I am relatively content that our votes matter and that Ralph Nader was wrong. when Ralph Nader said there are two parties and they're exactly the same and your vote doesn't make a difference, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you cannot believe that to be the case after 8 years. You just cannot. I will not, I'm not telling you who to vote for, but I can tell you that I will not be voting for third, fourth, fifth party candidates. There's an important choice that we make and participate in. So the question is always, so what do you serve for communion? And being Unitarians, we don't have just one thing, which is why you're invited to bring the beverage of your choice, although not the meat or shellfish of your choice, on Tuesday. And we will have a nice ice bucket, and there'll be champagne on one side and Sterno on the other, and however it turns out, you pick your communion, and in case of champagne, you live with it. In case of the Sterno, maybe not so much. But it is important. Elections make a difference, and we make a difference. When we don't vote, we lose a basic right, and that's the right to complain. And that's one of the most precious rights that I treasure. And if you take away my right to complain, I'm going to be very unhappy. So everybody, have reinforce your right to be a part of the process, to be a critic of the process, to be a lover of the process. Anybody who's been in love knows that you get angry, you get mad, you get into fights, you yell, you scream, you slam doors, and we do that with our families, we do that with our religious establishments, we do that with our political parties, we do it with our political systems. That's intimacy. Be an intimate part of the land that we will build by our action, or we will let others build by our inaction. Tuesday's communion. Let's celebrate and hope for most of you that you'll still be celebrating on Wednesday.